Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode.
I would like to welcome to the stage, first of all, Andrey Zinkovich, who is the co-founder of FullFunnel.io. So he's going to be excited to talk about that, which transforms B2B tech and service-based companies from siloed sales and marketing to full-funnel account-based marketing and demand generation. FullFunnel.io helps your teams develop an ABM strategy, launch pilot programs, operationalize and scale the programs without ramping up budget, depending on external agencies. So I'm going to bring Andrey up to the stage. Are you here, Andrey?
Yeah, there we go. Thanks.
Yay. For the intro. Great.
Everybody.
Great. Sweet. I'm going to bring up our next guest. We are going to bring up Mason Cosby. He is a specialist in building scrappy ABM programs on low budgets that drive high impact. Serving as the marketing lead at numerous boutique bootstrap businesses, Mason has sourced over $8 million in the past 3 years, driving 18x return on investment. If you're looking for no-nonsense practical marketing executive that drives revenue, he is definitely the one to provide it. So, Mason, welcome to the stage. Hello, hello.
Hi, everybody.
Great. My first question to all of you guys is, how much does the technology stack actually matter?
Mason, would you like to kick off?
Yeah, I mean, if you go Google scrappy ABM, the first thing that I say is ABM programs with a 200K tech stack. So I think people first go by technology, thinking it's a silver bullet for solving all of their problems. When at the end of the day, the core three reasons ABM fails has nothing to do with actually the technology. So to get started, if you just have a CRM where you're tracking your customer data and a marketing automation platform, you can get started building it out today. And then I like to, and now you said it really well, processes first. So it's processes and people. And once you've nailed the processes and the people, you then find your gaps that prevent you from scaling, and you actually fill in technology or new people or new headcount in order to continue to scale the program. So I don't think for getting started, it matters. Inevitably, as you scale, complexity will creep in. You'll need some tech to help you get there.
Yeah, it also depends on the motions that you are running. So you can do ABM just pure expansion place, and you can have only CRM for this. You can just sit down with your sales team and then work on account expansion. Simple as that.
Are we all in agreement, though, that you do need a CRM?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I can't imagine it would be funny to hear if anybody here doesn't CRM system in place. I think this is the first.
My first ABM program was with a spreadsheet, and it was terrible. So technically you can do it, but just because you can technically do it doesn't mean you should.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. That was very much what I was saying in that first slide, is that technically we can do all of this without any software. Like, you can sell, if you really wanted to, you could probably convince someone to buy something from you by just walking up to their office, banging on the door enough times and getting them to buy something from you. But is that a cost-effective way of doing it? There's a big difference between doing an ABM approach where you find the name of the CEO, find his best friend, take him on a yachting trip, then take him maybe to the theater, and like actually do that like old school relationship building, because it costs a fortune. And with the price of all of our products coming down, like, it's not scalable. So I think I'm with you, Mason, with the fact that we're all suffering from shiny object syndrome. Don't just go and buy stuff for the sake of buying it. Andrey mentioned start with a CRM as the basis. And it's worth noting there are free CRM tools that you can get started with HubSpot free. Like, at the very least, get something free. So maybe I could start with talking about the processes in terms of, where do you start with your processes?
This is what we have discussed behind the scenes before this episode. Obviously, you need to nail down a few foundational things, right? First of all, you need to get buy-in for your ABM program and set up the right expectations from your stakeholders, from your key executives, and from the sales team. and you need to get alignment here. And we can dive really deeply and discuss like in-depth processes, including account analysis, historical growth, etc., to select right segment. But I would just, I don't want to kind of have 15 minutes talk about all the fundamental things. I would just summarize and share six things that are six more precisely six questions that every team that considers to launch account-based marketing should discuss. The first one is, how do we select a market segment or cluster where we're likely to get the results, right? And results depend on what we actually want to achieve. Next one is, how do we select the accounts that are likely to become sales opportunities? And next, how can we define the right buyers? Because here is the reality. Companies can say, hey, we want to sell to Oracle, and we are selling to IT teams. But then you open Sales Navigator, and suddenly you realize that there are potentially 600 buyers. So how are you going to do your ABM program? So that's the second question. The third one is, how do we prioritize which accounts to focus on opportunity development? Because you can use all the latest technology and you can apply your ICP criteria. And I don't want to talk even about ICP development, but let's say you apply this criteria and you end up with thousands of accounts and you have a tiny ABM team. So now is the question, what we are going to do with all the 1,000 accounts, right? How are we going to prioritize accounts that are likely to become sales opportunities? And the last three questions, how do we warm up the buying committee? How can we make sure that the most important buyers are aware of our solution? Next, how we're going to activate these accounts, or basically how we're going to create sales opportunities with them? And lastly, how do we maintain our program and track our progress? So these are the six fundamental questions that I believe GTM teams should discuss.
I love that. Thanks for sharing that, Andre. Mason, how about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I think Andre did a fantastic breakdown of six strategic questions to ask. Our team over here at Scrappy ABM has got a 4D framework that's a lot more tactically focused. So I think if you were to start with Andre's six questions, that's going to give you a fantastic foundation to then go and understand, where do we actually build? So for the build process of actually getting started, your 4Ds are data, distribution, destination, and direction. Fundamentally, data is two core components. It's targets. So again, as Andre said, what are our verticals? Who we prioritize? Why are we going after these? Or what's the business use case to target these people? But then we also marry that with triggers. And I think that's something that's often missed in building out a program. Some people just go into a data enrichment platform, build a firmographic list and say, awesome, these are our 30,000 target accounts. No, they're not. They don't know that you exist. So when you marry targets with triggers being, what are the engagement touch points or the intent touch points? Or again, essentially, like, why are we reaching out to these people from their perspective? So we have a business case with targets. They have a reason to be reached out to from their perspective that are triggers. And when you marry those two things together, you get nuanced, personalized messaging. So all of that is data. Next is then distribution. So again, that's pretty simple. How are we getting in front of these people? We think about outbound email. We think about paid ads. But like, one of my most successful ABM programs was community, because all of my target accounts were hanging out somewhere and I just hung out there with them. Crazy concept. So that's distribution. Next is then destination. So based on the reason you're reaching out, your trigger, they did something. They have a question. They have a problem that they need to solve. So your destination is what I refer to as next step content. So they're at a current stage. How do you help them take the next step? Through educational content and information. So destination is, what are you sending them to? And then lastly, direction, as Andre answered with his last question, like, how do we track this? So you already referenced RB2B. RB2B is a fantastic tracking tool for website-based engagement. So if you can answer those four buckets, you have a playbook that you could go and implement and actually start to get rolling with some kind of a program.
Thanks for sharing that, guys. And I think it's now like listening to both of you talk about it. I'm really into my triggers at the minute, like really into them, like thinking about, especially with your ICP, like your firmographics, your demographics. And I like to call them like intentographics. Like, what are triggers? What are the intent markers? And I don't believe there is one intent marker that's going to work for every business. Like, you're going to have your own bespoke ones. And actually finding intent markers that nobody else knows about, and you're getting there like one step before your competitor, I think that's what's key. Like, understanding the way in which your accounts buy, the way they think, the different stakeholders and the way that their roles are developing and who's now got buying power and where they're going and how they're behaving. I do agree as well that private channels are a great place to understand the way in which your buyers are buying, because a lot of the stuff now, it's not so easy. People aren't going to public events. They are, however, hanging out in private Slack channels, private WhatsApp groups, going to more closed door, invite only communities in which they can feel safe discussing what they want to discuss. If you have if marketing to COOs and you have a COO within your company, go and get them to go and be your market research person to understand the way in which people are starting to think as well. And make sure you're capturing that data within your CRM in a way in which you can, as Andre and Mason said, analyze it to take that next step forwards on their journey. So thanks for sharing that, guys. I'm going to have a quick look to see if we have any questions from the audience. Okay, so we have a question here from Heather, who says, curious to the best way to use third-party intent data in your ABM playbooks. I have a few opinions on this, but I'm curious to hear you guys' opinions first before I jump in with my gung-ho opinion.
I would say, and Mason mentioned this, there is a big difference between accounts that are aware of you and accounts that are not aware of you, right? And so that's the difference in intent that first-party data gives you and third-party data gives you. The problem is that, again, partially we have discussed it, that a lot of teams use it as a silver bullet. We have seen this data from G2. Okay, let's start our outreach. Let's add these accounts to retargeting layer and run a messaging, basically begging for a demo, right? Book a demo with us, please. Let's add to nurture and cadence this infamous 21 touches email and LinkedIn cadence, right? So just to book this demo. The problem is that the accounts that are on this stage, they might be just doing the research, and there is different level of demand. They might not be looking for a vendor. They might be just considering different solutions and partially reviewing technology, which means there is no buying intent at all, right? And coming back to the previous point when you asked about the strategic questions, right? Ask like how we're going to prioritize accounts. So always categorize or segment all accounts into three buckets. There is a cluster ICP accounts that demonstrated some level, or let's say some level of intent, and I'm not talking about buying intent, I'm level of intent, and they fit your ICP. But the problem is that these accounts are not aware of you, and checking your page on G2 is not brand awareness. Let's be honest, right? They are not aware of you, and we don't know their challenge. Hence, we can't sell them. The reality is, and the goal of our playbook is creating awareness among these accounts. Now, the next bucket is the accounts that we call, let's say, future pipeline accounts that could be converted in the next 6 to 9 months, right? These accounts fit our ICP. There is some level of brand awareness, and this could mean different things for different teams. The truth is that marketing and sales need to agree together what specific engagement an account should demonstrate to call this account a vendor-aware account, right? But we don't know their challenge. Hence, our playbook should be designed that way that we need to validate their challenge first and understand how we can help this account. And lastly, active focus. These are accounts that are aware of us, we know their challenge, and there is a strong buying intent, what Mason said, right? And these are the accounts where we spend 80% of our time. And that's the difference, right? So in most cases, to call account vendor-aware account, you need to look at first-party intent data, right? This is where these signals are coming from, definitely from not third-party intent. So that's my take.
I think what I heard is I didn't see any value in third-party data there, but definitely reasons not to use it.
I don't know, because let's be honest, there are teams that might run successful programs using third-party intent data. I personally don't have any case study, or I'm not aware of companies that have done this successfully. But the fact that these tools, or let's say this solution, still exists means that probably there are some teams that have success with it. Who knows?
Thanks for sharing. Yeah, I have some thoughts, but I'll save them for the end. Mason?
I think Andre said it like really well of, I use the phrase like, they may be in market, but they're not in market for you because they don't know that you exist. So I use third-party intent largely as awareness triggers to then say, oh, this person may be interested in a solution down the road. We should make sure that they know that we exist. And then you build conversion-based programming around first-party engagement or first-party intent data because you know that they know that you exist. The other way that we use it often is we refer to it as like third-party plus. So third-party plus another signal, because then the third-party intent data provides some level of potential prioritization around they're actively researching these things. Plus, they recently attended our event and they were super actively engaged as a registrant, or we met them at this in-person event. We shook hands, we talked for an hour, and they're showing third-party intent. Or they were a closed lost opportunity that was lost 3 months ago, and they engaged in a three-month contract with their vendor. Now they're researching again. Maybe an opportunity. So if you do third-party plus another signal, it actually can help you with account prioritization for how you then reach out.
Yeah, I love that. And I think it's really interesting that you said that third-party data is a trigger for awareness. Actually, that's a really nice way of thinking it. I'm personally not a big fan of third-party data sources that give you a high, medium, or low intent score. One, we don't know how they're modeling that data. It's basically a black box. It's like all of the other black box like advertising systems. Like, you don't know how they're deciding that. It's not been based on your model. The amount of money these vendors are charging to basically tell you if they're low, medium, high, I think I'm not a fan at all. I've looked at G2's data myself, and I actually quite like the fact that they provide you with accounts that are looking at companies that are similar to yours, and therefore I can agree that's an awareness trigger. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they are in the market to buy. It just means that they're looking around and doing some early research. And yes, if you can start getting in front of them to raise awareness, it's better positioning yourself there than not positioning at all. You don't want to get lost or get yourself on G2 and do it that way as well. Some of the third-party intent data that I do like is more related to job changes and things like that, which aren't really account-based data, but it's individual data that signals that an account itself might have intent. So if you're using third-party data, my advice would be to be very selective over picking your own points. And if possible, go and find points that other people do not have, rather than investing in a 20 to 40 grand a year tool that's going to tell you low, medium, and high and push it into your CRM. But yeah, I agree that a combination of ideally first, primarily with third, is the best way to see how much intent. And then if you can combine that with contact specific intent markers, even better, because, and I want your guys' opinion on this, I've met a lot of ABM people who I would consider, I think the best way to phrase this is perhaps ABM extremists, where if you're not talking about an account, you're not talking about ABM. And I've very much voiced my opinion of, but like, part of the account is the people in it. Like, a business itself can't sign your contract. Like, it is a person that has to do the signing at the end. And have you guys come across these people who just purely are like blinded by this word account and only focus on account and kind of forget there's people in it?
I'd love to hop in specifically. Reference champion tracking. Yeah. Personally, I don't even know that champion tracking would be qualified as third-party intent, because I think it's actually largely based as a first-party signal.
Yeah.
Your customer moved to a different company, that's a signal that's first-party. And I worked in companies that we just followed specific contacts from one job to another. And we sourced 30% of our revenue through champion tracking as a program alone. Technically, it's a contact-focused program, but what I've found and is generally recognized is people, once they've grown to a decision-making role in their organization, they move to other companies that are in the same ICP or even just the same industry. So again, they may happen to be on your target account list, but also somebody that loved me at their last company that went to another company that may not have been perfectly on my target account list, but it's a good fit company, I'm probably going to just congratulate them on their job and let serendipity happen and just not let them forget that we exist. So from my perspective, and again, I want to also give context, Scrappy ABM is pre-pilot programs. So like, we help make the transition from a contact focus to an account focused approach. So like, my perspective is very skewed by that, because almost all of our programs start contact focused to help you get the ball moving. But I think if you get so honed in on, this wasn't a perfect ICP fit target account that was exclusively on this list, it's, do you know how many companies are created? There may be ICP fit companies that didn't perfectly match your criteria when you built your list 9 months ago that you happened to build as a static list, and maybe they're now a fit. So I don't get too bogged down in that side. Mm-hmm. I'm more focused on, is this account a right fit company? And maybe if I follow a contact that happens to have loved me from a past company and they move to another right fit company, even if they weren't on my target account list, still probably a good thing to track and to follow along.
Amazing. And Andre.
Yeah, there is a funny effect. We were discussing the first party versus third party intent. And even if you look at the first party intent or third party, it doesn't even matter. It still would be a contact signal, right? Because it's not an account, but there is a specific buyer. And you'd have no idea if they have, if they do just research out of curiosity or because they have a specific business trigger. Now, coming back to the first party intent, right? There is still, Let's imagine a practical situation, website visitors, right? Repetitive visits, you see a person who checks your case study, price, and etc. But again, that could be just specific buyer who likes your LinkedIn content or who get acquainted with you on a specific event and who checks your product out of curiosity, right? So that's an example. You still start from the contact. Now, to give you a very specific example, I'm thinking about one of the best programs that we have done with the client, and that program generated more than 5 million in 12 months. Now, the most interesting part, so the segment was companies that are in ed tech. Now, the problem was that how the accounts were prioritized and how the entire list was built, because we were selling a very specific solution, mobile AK. So we were looking first, and we were basically disqualifying all accounts where developers didn't have mobile SDK as a keyword on their LinkedIn profile. So our list was built entirely based on this. And it was, let's say, contact-based approach. So accounts were selected based on contacts, because when you, there are people who are in charge of specific jobs to be done, we can help with. So that's an answer.
So thank you for clearing that up. I can't wait to share this clip with some of my diehard ABM friends that keep telling me we have to do everything based on accounts. Remember, accounts aren't just a combination of people with an infrastructure that's called a business. But it is important to think about things like account penetration, and therefore we can think about how ready to buy that account might be or how easy to convert, because then we start thinking about our like pipeline metrics. And rather than just having one person on a deal, which historically you might have done, we know that now, today in B2B, it takes somewhere between 8 to 15 people to make a decision to buy a technology. So if we're not multi-threading and thinking about things from an account perspective, the likelihood is you're going to spend a long time warming up, nurturing this one human being who becomes your champion without thinking about everyone else. If everybody else is still in the awareness stale, your sales like pipeline is just going to take forever. And likelihood is it's going to dump. Like, I'm a big fan of trying to raise awareness with multiple people, which brings me on to my next question, because this is a real life question that a lot of people have. And I'm still umming and ahhing about this myself. And this is in terms of life cycle stage marketing or measuring people, measuring life cycle stage, either at an account level or a contact level. Because to me, providing contextually relevant communication to a human would require us to map life cycle stages at a contact level, even if we're using an ABM approach. Because why would we send the same message to everybody in the whole account based on an account life cycle if different people in the account were at different stages? So I'm going to hand that one over to you guys and get like maybe brainstorm some thinking around that.
Sure. I can kick off, and I would say that really it depends on your organization and the maturity of your RevOps. If you have great RevOps function, you can do the measurement both ways. If you don't have it, and because before this, we were chatting about data hygiene, right? And how good is your data, how good you are at collecting different touch points, et cetera. Because if you don't have good data procedures, then it won't work. I personally believe that for the most teams, it makes sense, and especially those that are starting out with ABM or let's say just on their operationalization stage, I would prefer tracking on account level, because it's simple, it's way easier to track, and it's way more predictive, right? Because here you show the impact on the pipeline. On the contact level, it could be tricky, because again, as you said, there could be contacts from multiple accounts. But let's say, what if you didn't prioritize this account? Does it mean that you need to restructure your program in the middle? Sometimes this is where the complexity comes from. So on the account level, you can just create a simple CRM, or you can just adjust your CRM to ABM programs and add specific stages, right? If you have your ABM playbook, depending on different activities inside that playbook, you can create these different stages. And then you can easily present that report or share this report with everybody, right? While on contact level, I honestly believe you need to have a good RevOps function to be able to measure it properly.
I agree. And I think it, as Andre said, it's a matter of maturity. So if you are a more mature organization, like, you can have the account-based approach and the contact level approach. I almost still recommend, because again, most of our programming is helping people make the transition to even thinking account focused. Like, in most of our programming, we actually start on the contact level for lifecycle stages. And we don't really have out of the gate account-based scoring mechanisms quite yet in place. We're primarily focused on moving right decision makers or influencers in the deal to the next stage of their buying journey that's defined through an account progression model. And often that is known in theory. And as you have more data that actually flows through your system, generally about 3-4 months in, we build out the account scoring dashboard and the account progression model dashboard. The goal is not to keep your account progression model not easily tracked within a RevOps function or within your tech stack, but as like day one, are you going to have an account scoring model? Probably not. If you're just using a CRM and marketing automation platform, most of them out of the box are very contact focused in nature. So again, that's a really detailed tactical thought process around like day one, you're probably going to be lifecycle focused or on the contact level. But as you mature, you'll likely switch over to an ABM, like true account scoring mechanism and account progression model. And within that, if you want to get really mature, then it would be, Natalie, as you outline, individual contact lifecycle stages to nuance the message based on where that contact is in their journey, and then holistic account level lifecycle stages. So I just want to give context of, I don't think there is a correct answer. I think there's a correct answer for the stage of the maturity of your program.
I love that. Thank you so much.
Keep in mind that it will require a lot of alignment between different people and different units. And the bigger is your team, the more complex it will be.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of actually starting. We tend to start projects with lifecycle stage first and defining the lifecycle stages of people and accounts, because if you haven't aligned those, how can you track volume of leads, MQLs, SQLs, opportunities, customers, expansions? How can you even run those reports on acceleration and conversions? It's quite difficult. I want to just take this last few minutes to thank our speakers. Thank you, Mason and Andre. And if you could maybe share with the audience a little bit more about, if they want to follow you or learn more about what you're up to, where can they find you, Mason?
Yes, long and short, if you want to follow me, go find me on LinkedIn. I post a lot about account-based marketing and photos of my daughter, because I live in the crawl stage of account-based marketing and she is actively learning to crawl right now. The analogies make themselves. It's pretty amazing. And then also you can go find the Scrappy ABM podcast, where we are digging into highly practical ways of implementing around trigger-based programming.
Awesome. And Andre.
Yeah, like Mason, sharing with my co-founder our thoughts on account-based and demand generation for B2B tech companies with long sales cycles on LinkedIn. We have our podcast, which is as well live podcast, Full Funnel Live, and we have our newsletter on Substack. So these are three places.
And haven't you just launched a book as well?
We plan to. We just announced it, right? Yeah. So it's in progress.
Do you have a book yet, Mason?
I'm halfway through one.
It's on my list. Well, you've told everyone here now. Mason's halfway through a book. Keep following him. You'll
keep getting it on the down low.
Yeah. I've always been writing a book, which has never quite got there just yet, but it's on the list of things to do. I think it's great to be able to share this value with all of you that have come to this event. Thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. My name is Natalie Furness. You can find me on LinkedIn, founder, COO, CEO, RevOps Automated. I also have a podcast, The Road to Revenue, in which we interview top people who are building scalable businesses above 100 million kind of plus. Yeah, and that's it really. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you, guests. And I'm going to stop the live now and wish you all the best day.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, we've got a ton of other episodes that dig into how you can build programs using your existing tech stack. Additionally, if you have specific questions you'd like to ask, we host a weekly live stream on LinkedIn called the ABM AMA, where you can join and get your questions answered directly by experts. And lastly, if you're looking for practical templates, guides, frameworks, and playbooks, check out scrappyabm.com, where we're building a library of resources that help ABMers just like you get their programs off the ground. Again, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I look forward to seeing you in the next one.